Radio. Here we go.
Welcome back to another episode of On the Porch. I'm Bill. Here with me, I have Teef.
Yeah, I'm co-host. Teef.
Yeah, you are Teef. And we have, as usual, we have another special guest with us. We have Mr. Coach K. And now, Coach K, usually with me, is football talk, but we are way out of the season now, currently in January. So basketball is currently in season. So next, while Coach Davis, but welcome on the porch. Of course, not okay, it's going to be some football talk, but mostly there's going to be some regular conversations. Just going to pick your brain a little bit. Now, first question I have for you is, how are you doing today, first off?
I'm doing great. Glad to be back. It's been a while. I think the last time was regionals, getting ready for Center Grove back in second week in November. So it's been a while.
It has been a long time. We in the second week of January now. Mm-hmm. So, all right. So where does love for football come from? Obviously, I know you've been a Warrior way before. And you
before play. Any of you were born.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I started playing football when I was in elementary school here on the east side, over at St. Simon's. It doesn't even exist. The school closed down years ago. And started playing football as a little kid and kind of liked hitting things and didn't kind of found my niche. I also played basketball and baseball growing up and at the high school level. So did a little bit of multiple things, but football is what I really enjoyed doing. I really enjoyed the specialty of Friday nights. It's something we tell the kids all the time, cherish it because it's going to go away. And even if you go off to college and play, it won't compare to Friday nights with guys you grew up with and played junior high ball with. And, I played at Stony Brook and I'm still in touch with those guys, like Gary McCall and John Warren and some of the guys I played with back in the day. And so it's just a special feeling to be out there on a Friday night. The games I remembered most are the ones that were late in the season, the cold weather games when it started getting really cold and it'd be in the 30s at game time. And I really enjoyed those moments because it's something that just resonated with me. I took that and went to college and did a little bit of college football and wasn't really good at it, but managed to find a place to play a little bit and do things like that. So, and then what really hit me is when I got done with my college degree and the first fall came around in 1983, when I wasn't playing and I was out of school and I was working. And it was like I would go to a game and I'd be like, man, this isn't good. I feel something that should be happening and it's not. And so then I started coaching youth football. Back in 1984 would have been my first youth football. And never coached before in my life, never, team went undefeated and had a blast. And I thought, this is what I should do.
Yeah.
And then I went back to school. I literally put myself back in school and got another degree so I could be a teacher. And started coaching, kept coaching, getting my degree. And then my first varsity coaching job happened in 1990 here at Warren Central.
Jeez.
Yeah, that's a good story. If I made a team go undefeated, I'd stick to it.
I kept coaching.
Nah, that's a sign. If you go undefeated your first year coaching, it was clearly made for you. And I was just going to ask you, of course, where that love for coaching come from? Because obviously you've been here for, I believe, two years. So. I've been here. You've been coaching, so it's definitely cool to see that. We also had Mr. O'Brien. That was the first coach I think we had officially on here. So second one, of course. But yeah, of course. I know you talked about it. Game nights. Very something very special about it. Even on our side, just calling the games is very fun. Seeing y'all come out, warm up. The intensity of the crowds. I know even in basketball. It's like the crowds is there, but in football, it's way higher. But I feel like in basketball, you just hear it more. But football, it just depends on the moment. But football, it's like the moment's like I'm trying to think of a moment. Like against BD, you wasn't there, too. But when we played BD, everybody was coming back. You can tell, fans was leaving. But when we was coming back, you can still feel the pressure and high energy going on.
This was last season, right?
This is last season.
The one before this one.
When you was a junior and I was a sophomore. Right.
The 57-56 game. Tell you a story that it's really pretty interesting in that game. We're down 50. We're down two scores. So we're down 56 to whatever, 44, I think it is, 43. Yeah, 56 to 43. And my wife and my daughter and her three sons are standing in the corner of the end zone, and there's about 2 minutes to go, and I look down there, and they're gone. I thought, Dad Byrne, my own wife doesn't think we're going to win this game. True story, she gets all the way to the car, and a friend of mine whose son played quarterback for me at Ben Davis when we won the state in 2014 is standing down in the same end zone, and he calls her, and he said, your husband's team just scored. I think you need to come back. And about that time, we get the onside kick, and my wife comes walking in as we score the winning touchdown. She come up to me and she said, what a great game. I said, how would you know? You left. I said, you didn't even stay around to see us win this. And she goes, well, we thought for sure. I said, no, you don't count out warriors. You don't count out men who are fighting for the right to play again and the pride of the East Side and what it means to wear black and gold. You know, and you were alluding to, you know, why'd I come back to coaching? And one, for the love of the game. One, I miss being around it. And two, the competition. You talk about you're playing as a fourth grader and a fifth grader and a sixth grader, and you're playing in college, and all of a sudden you get to be 22 and you're not playing anymore. And they say, well, there's no place for you to play. You know, there's no pros for me. There's nothing like that in my future. You're just done. You know, well, I picked up softball games, and I started playing league basketball games. Not the same. And so the thrill of a Friday night and the tradition that this place has is unique. And you talked about how football is a different level partly because that's when we first coming back to school. You guys have been out for the summer. You've been away, and there's a lot of build up for that. But part of that build up was because you guys won it here in 84 and 85 and 2003 and 2004 and 2005 and 2006 and 2009 and 2013 and 2018. And when you win it that many times, the expectation is you're going to keep winning it. Mm-hmm. And so people want to be part of that. They want to feel that. All right, it's in their blood. The past, the present, and the future are all in their blood to be part of that warrior tradition. And so Friday nights are special because of what was built over generations of coaches like Jerry Stauffer and Kevin Wright and Steve Tutsey. They built that tradition that we have a duty, me going forward and the players currently on the team, we have a duty and an obligation to uphold that. And anything short of that, I don't want to say it's a failure, but it's an unfinished mission, and we've got to go back out and finish the mission.
Okay, very wise words. But now, Teef, before I let you go on, my final question is, of course, on the coaching side, I feel like football is kind of harder than usual because I have a lot of kids training, you know, trying to make it to the spot, especially compared. I feel like second is like what, track probably, maybe. Y'all have a crew, but it's not that many, yeah. But okay, so how is it trying to, like, I know, what's the struggles of basically coaching football? Because I know for basketball, it's just a 15-man roster, maybe 30 for varsity or whatever. But what's the struggles on that part?
Well, it is a struggle because grades 9 through 12, will have somewhere between 180 and 200 kids. 27 coaches from 9th grade on up. A lot of moving parts. It requires lots of time and organization. For instance, at our banquet in December, they were already given their calendar for January, February, all the way through the season. And so I start putting the calendar for this season together during fall break so that when we get done with our season, I can immediately hand them a calendar for the next seasons, because not only are they lifting in class, they got to lift and train 4 days a week after school. So we're in the weight room Mondays, Tuesdays, Thursdays, Fridays, now all of January, all of February, all of March, and then in April and May, we start practicing. We get to have an open period, and we start practicing. And the summer's hit, and you've got all the conditioning, and you got all the lifting. So it just requires a lot of time and a lot of organization. And I learned a long time ago that if you do the organization up front and get out ahead of it, it helps relieve the stress a little bit of getting all the moving parts in one place at one time. Because football, unlike most sports, does have a lot of people, you know, and then you've got to have a lot of good coaches. You've got to have a lot of good men who are willing to give up a lot of time, you know, because if you actually took an assistant coach's pay and divided it by the hours they put in the weight room and the training and the conditioning and the actual practice, they're getting about, I know this will probably shock you, about 8 cents an hour for their time, you know, which isn't
It's not a lot.
Not many people sitting in this room right now would take a job for 8 cents an hour. You know, but I get it. They do it because they love football. They love the experience they had growing up as well.
Yeah. So he's switching over to me. He asks all like the really good ones I was thinking about. But like one big question, only one question I have is, what characteristics should a coach have?
First and foremost, he's got to care about people. If you don't care about the individual, I'm going to back you up. For the longest time, when I was coaching here in the 90s, and even after I left here and became a head coach someplace else, I was always a coach that was looking to win the championship so I could move up, so my name gets in the paper. I was a very dysfunctional coach. Now, that doesn't mean we weren't winning. Doesn't mean we weren't winning championships. Doesn't mean we weren't going to the state, but I was a very dysfunctional coach. I thought I was a smart coach because we won games, but I wasn't a good coach because I didn't understand the people I was coaching. And it wasn't until I had a leadership meeting at my house in January of 2011 that I realized I was not a good football coach. And again, we identify good winning and losing. We got a young man sitting in the radio station with here that's a state-ranked top wrestler, one of the best I've ever watched wrestle, all right? And we identify his success or failure based on winning and losing, which is a really shallow way of looking at people. And I'm the one sitting here telling you I'm guilty of being that person. Instead of looking at what Mr. Lavelle's done as a wrestler, I should be looking at what Mr. Lavelle is doing as a person. And I was looking at my players as what they could do for me as football players, not what I can help them do to become better men, better husbands, and better citizens. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I had this meeting in my house, about 25 young men, and we did a thing called Share Your Life Story, and the kids would go around the room, and they would tell us about their life. And the first kid to my right was named Anthony. And I'm not going to use last names on the air, but Anthony was an outside linebacker for me and went to Wabash, graduated from Wabash, is a fireman, father of two, living in California. But I knew Anthony, at least in my mind, I knew Anthony, because Anthony lived five houses away from me and came over to my house to play basketball all the time. I really knew Anthony, and it turned out I didn't know anything about Anthony. See, Anthony grew up with a father who was black and a mother who was white, and his family did not believe in interracial marriages, so they were never allowed to attend family reunions. The next man had a really good, interesting family story, the next man. All of a sudden, the fourth one comes around, he's rolling up his sleeves. And I really knew this kid. He's an unbelievable football player. And I'm looking at him, what are you rolling your sleeves up for? He begins to tell all of us with these massive scars where he tried to kill himself. All of a sudden, it dawned on me that I knew that young man only as a football player. What a bad person I was. What a bad coach I was. I only knew him for what they could do for me, not what I could do for them. And until I decided as a person, it was more important that what I do for them and is more important long-term than any win, then I changed my life. And I use the term, I begin to live a life of what I call permanent purpose. The purpose is to help people be the best version of themselves. And if you win, that's just a byproduct of doing things right to help them become the best people they can be. And that's ultimately what we're on this earth for. God only gives us this one opportunity. He only gives us this one life. And if we waste it chasing our own dreams, not that we shouldn't have dreams, but there's a saying, a good leader doesn't climb the mountain by himself. He tries to figure out how to get everybody to climb the mountain with him. Because if we all reach the summit, if we all reach the peak of greatness, then we all live the life we were supposed to lead. But if I'm the only one up there, then I'm leading a lonely life. And that's what I was doing, and that's what was wrong. And not everybody in that group, in that room that night, there were 25 of them made it. I got a young man by the name of Michael who had a full ride to Western Michigan, quit, got into trouble. He's going to be in prison for at least another 15 years. He didn't make it. But his story was really interesting because he talked about in that night he was sitting there and he's crying. And he's got these big tears rolling down his cheek, and he's looking at me, and he's looking at me, and he says, Coach, tell me I'm not crazy. He said it about five times. Finally, I said, Michael, who says you're crazy? He said, see, Coach, when I was in the sixth grade, I watched my mama get beat up by her boyfriend. I said, if I ever find him or see him again, I'm going to fix it. He goes, when I was in the eighth grade, I'm walking home from Chapel Hill, and I see him in the strip mall. I run to my apartment, I get a bat, and I beat him, and I beat him bad. And with big tears in his eyes, big tears, he looks at me and says, Coach, tell me I'm not crazy. And all of a sudden, you're looking at him and going, how do I tell him? How do I tell him he's not crazy? He's in therapy. He's in. Well, Michael didn't make it, man. He never could get past all the issues of his childhood. Well, that's a failure on my part. I should have known he needed more help than what I can give as a football coach and as a person. But I have the resources to get that young man help. And when we do that, we win. We may not win on Friday night, but we win, all right? And the more kids that get out of here and get on their own and become good husbands and good fathers, those are wins. And those are what makes coaching what it is to me.
Them were some very strong words.
Very strong words.
From Coach. Dang.
Sorry.
He's opened my eyes because, like, yeah, it's way more than this about winning them games or winning them meets. It goes beyond that. When you're done with that, you got to keep being a good person. But you got any more questions?
I'm all good, man.
All right. So I'm happy we finished off with that strong story from Coach. And this is On the Porch, and we are out.
Peace.
Thanks.